Godzilla is now in New York City.
Monster 01 and 02, commence the attack.
And welcome back to this very special episode of Stomp This Way. Today we are, for the first time in the history of this podcast, revisiting a film. And of course we are revisiting Minus One. And joining us today we have a very special guest. Please welcome back to the show, Dylan.
Special?
Special.
Special.
Special in every meaning of the word.
Somebody had to do it.
Hey.
Somebody had to do it. How's it going?
Oh, it's going great. How are you?
I'm peachy.
Peachy.
I'm just peachy.
Peachy is a great term for it.
Yes.
So, yeah. But we've already talked about Minus One, so we're not gonna go through the whole production trivia and whatever and whatever. But because today is all about you, Dylan. Today
all,
is
about all about you. You.
Okay.
How's life?
Tell us how's life.
How's life going?
I'm living the dream.
You're living the dream.
You moved
to the big city.
I did. I did in fact move to the city. So I guess about almost 2 years ago now. Moved up to Oklahoma City. I started working in insurance in October of 21. So right about the time we were getting close to the end of the podcast the first time, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Started getting into insurance, which is part of why we ended up kind of falling off the first time. Everyone started getting too busy. You went back to school, I think, around that time. So,
yeah.
Life just got kind of crazy. My other buddy Garrett, he wanted to go to school up in Oklahoma City, or actually, I guess, really in Edmond at UCO. Shout out to anyone if they go to UCO. It's a good school.
No one listening to this podcast.
They don't go to UCO.
No. UCO.
But yeah, so we moved up there in February of 22. Continue to work in insurance. Work for a State Farm agency now. So we're killing it.
Sounds fun. Well, we're glad you're back.
I'm here. I'm glad to be here.
Joining us for this very momentous occasion.
It's memories.
For the vlog. Bringing back memories.
Good
for us. Probably some bad for Dylan. He's like, oh my God.
He's like, oh God, not again.
He's got scar tissue from some of those movies we had to watch.
What is this?
But
maybe not this time around.
Yeah, so me and Dylan, we went once again today to rewatch Minus One. It was my 6th viewing. Yeah.
Wow.
I got a problem. I got an addiction, guys.
He's seen it a few times.
Dylan, this was your second viewing, is that right?
Yeah, second time watching it. I watched it in IMAX about 2 or 3 weeks ago, roundabout.
Whenever that was, yeah.
Sometime. I didn't get to go to the special screening, but the AMC around the corner from the house, they were still showing it in IMAX, so I went and saw it on like a 9 o'clock screen on like a Thursday night in IMAX. It was like the only IMAX showing they had that day because it was taken up by something else that was
Beyonce, less probably. Cool. Yeah, Beyonce. Who needs Beyonce?
I don't know. Some people might like Beyonce.
I'm sorry.
Some
people. If you like Beyonce, that's cool.
I mean, it's no Taylor Swift Eras Tour movie.
You're going to start a war on this podcast. We don't need it.
No.
Anyway, but yeah, so, well, that's cool. Andrew, you're still sitting at 3 viewings. Andrew and I did go see it. I think we said this in the first podcast. On the early event screening at the Tulsa IMAX, I had my little fit throwing because they didn't even bother to pick up the trash at the theater between showings. But
how dare they?
No.
Hey. It's okay.
You know what made it better? Godzilla.
Godzilla made me feel a lot better about it. But yeah, you know, something I didn't really talk about in our first recording of this podcast that I wanted to kind of go around the table and talk about here. You know, what were our expectations going into the movie? And Dylan, I'll start with you. Before you saw it the first time, like how much did you know going in, and what were kind of your expectations of what it was going to turn out to be?
Honestly, not a whole lot. I think I had briefly remember hearing that they were coming out with a new Godzilla movie from Toho.
Yeah.
First Japanese production since Shin Godzilla.
That's right.
So
first live action.
Japanese production since Shin Godzilla. There you go. Fair enough. Yeah. So I mean, I hadn't really thought about it a whole lot really until it got closer to time to coming out, and then I started to see a couple ads every once in a while. Not a whole lot of marketing for this movie, really.
No.
So the fact that it's kind of gained the audience that it has is pretty impressive. I assume mostly from word of mouth, which has been great, and that's really how I heard about it.
Yeah. The old
word of mouth on the internet. So lots of people on YouTube, lots of people just on Twitter kind of talking about it. Even people that I know that are not fans of kaiju movies that went and saw it, they were like, that was an awesome movie. So, I mean, I was like, well, might as well go watch it. I mean, I've seen all the others all the time saying so. Walking into it, I mean, having all the word of mouth that I'd heard of it, everyone talking about it being really great, I was like, I was expecting a pretty solid movie, and walked out, I was not disappointed. So
yeah, you know, I will say, going into it, of course, I had tracked every fucking moment. No, but of course, you know, it had released in Japan about a month prior to its release here in the U.S. I was amazed by how spoiler free I was going into the movie, because Shin Godzilla, I mean, by the time, of course, it took a little bit longer for them to get out in the States here, but I had seen a lot of stills from that movie and stuff and clips before it actually hit our theaters. I was actually pretty spoiler-free going into this one. Of course, there was a handful of reviews that had been posted by the time it came out into the States. You know, I expected to have a good time going into it. The reviews were mostly good. There were some that were kind of mixed reviews. So I thought, you know, going into it, I kind of thought, oh, it'll be a fun Godzilla movie. Of course, if you listen to our first podcast, you know that I absolutely love this movie walking out. Andrew, I'm guessing you were about the same.
Yeah. I enjoyed it.
You heard me talk about it a lot.
Aaron kept me in the loop the whole time about it.
Oh, he said you weren't missing out.
You're not missing out. Showed me every trailer.
Yes, every trailer. I had listened to the entire soundtrack before the movie came out, which I want to talk about a little bit later. But so yeah, Dylan, just tell me, the first time you walked out of it, out of your IMAX screening, what was your immediate reaction?
I was pretty impressed. I think that I walked out of it midnight, so I didn't text you to say anything. Yeah. You texted me the next morning. My initial reaction, I think, that I told you was like, easily one of the best Godzilla movies I've ever seen. Probably top five, if not top three, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's arguably, and I'll stand by that, it's arguably one of the best Godzilla movies I've seen out of the, 37 Godzilla movies I've seen.
This is the 37th feature film featuring Godzilla. Yes.
So there you go.
Yeah,
it's a lot of movies to hurdle over, but honestly, it's not a high hurdle for a lot of movies. No. He's like, you be quiet. Shut your mouth.
How would you rank it compared to other film? Would you make it a rank it among the best movies to come out this year?
It's definitely up there.
Yeah.
It's definitely up there. I was a pretty big fan of Oppenheimer. Mm-hmm. I saw it 3 times in IMAX. I was one of those.
It's 9 hours of your life.
It's 9 hours of my life. I was one of those. I'm a big Christopher Nolan fan, though. Yeah. So that was really good. I haven't seen Killers of the Flower Moon yet, which is kind of sad, considering the fact that I consider myself a movie buff, and I didn't go see the Martin Scorsese movie in theaters.
That's okay. I've skipped a lot of his movies before.
So, I mean, I definitely say it's up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, just some specific things I want to talk about this movie. You know, of course, like I said in our initial review, one of the things that makes this movie great is that I think, more so than any other Godzilla movie in the past, it has well-developed human characters that it actually makes you care about and makes you want to follow throughout the course of the movie. And actually, at least in my case, you actually want them to survive and not be stepped on by Godzilla, which, you know, I mean, of course there are other Godzilla movies that I think have good human characters. This one doesn't.
None of the legendary monster movies are those.
No.
Not
but this one
all.
actually has really good characters in my opinion. And, you know, I actually were rooting for them to win at the end, which is kind of shocking because, you know, just like any other Godzilla movie, I'm like, you know, destroy everything, Godzilla. Or just like in a Halloween movie where most of the time I'm like, God, I hope Michael Myers kills all these people, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
But how did you feel about the characters in this movie?
This is probably the best character work that I've seen in a Godzilla movie ever. Yeah. I would argue the character was probably better than the original.
Yeah.
These are actual characters that you have a story throughout the entire film. We follow our main character throughout the entire film, and he has a arc from start to finish.
Yeah.
That he goes on. And I mean, they do a really great job of making you care about the characters. I mean, I think you're very much right that by the end of the movie, you're rooting for them to win. A lot of that comes down to how they portray Godzilla as a character in this movie. This is the first time in a long time that you can look at Godzilla and be like, he is, truly the villain of this movie.
Yeah.
And he's actually, terrifying at times in the movie. You're like, wow, that's actually a scary Godzilla for once. So versus a lot of the Showa era movies. I mean, he's just like your friendly neighborhood Godzilla right down the street. He happens to fight monsters, but at the end of the day, he's a good guy, kind of, even though he's going to wreck some stuff.
Yeah, of course. He's ranged from straight up hero to a lot of movies he's an anti-hero.
And then like the legendary movies, like he starts out in the first one, obviously he kind of goes on his rampage in the first movie, but he ends up fighting the Mutos or whatever at the end.
He kind of accidentally kills a lot of people in Hawaii, but...
But in Godzilla vs. Kong, he's supposed to be, like, the protagonist of the movie. Like, he's fighting Kong and Mechagodzilla, so...
I think in Kong, he was the antagonist until Mechagodzilla showed up.
That's fair.
And then he reverted back to...
But, I mean, he's more of, like, he's less of, a true villain and less of, like, a scary threat compared to, like... the original movie, he's very much, very, very much supposed to be... A horrifying creature that is terrorizing Tokyo. So, and that's more in the style of this movie. So,
And I think another thing that really buoys this movie is the performances are actually really good. I looked up their names here on IMDb. Of course, you have Ryunosuke Kamiki, who is the main character of Shikishima, I believe is the character's name.
Koichi Shikishima or something like that.
Yeah, I really like his struggle in the film. He's this failed kamikaze pilot. He faked engine trouble on the day he was supposed to go crash his plane to a U.S. warship or whatever.
Right. And, you can see him struggling with that throughout the entire movie, and that's kind of part of his entire arc. I mean, he starts out as, a cowardice individual and deals with the trauma and everything of that experience, and it goes home to his, what it becomes his quote-unquote family life as he finds this woman and her and this baby that she's, taken, care of or whatever, and he continues to struggle with that and the trauma of being the reason that these people on Odo Island got killed, and he continues to grow as a person until the end. He gets the courage to finally face Godzilla again to try to redeem himself, which is it's legitimately for the one of the first times ever an actual character arc in a Godzilla movie.
We're pushing boundaries here. But no, I really like his story. I think Minami Hamabe, who's the female lead in this movie, she's really good in her scenes. And then there's the rest of the cast is really good as well. Something that has been made a big deal of on the interwebs is the fact that this movie was made, the listed budget on Wikipedia or whatever is $15 million. The director has come out and said that
he wishes that was the truth.
It wasn't even that. I've heard other reports that it was closer, and of course you're converting currency, so it's a little wonky, but it was closer to $10 million U.S. dollars. What are your feelings on how this movie looks, especially compared to that budget?
I think it looks honestly fantastic. I mean, the fact that you can make a movie. I think I read it was roughly 2 billion yen, whatever that converted to at the time.
Yeah.
So that's where it kind of gets wonky, depending on the strength of the yen or whatever, I guess. Yeah. But the fact that they were able to make a movie for somewhere between 10 and 15 million USD that looks as good as it did. I mean, I'd argue some of the CGI in the movie looks better than anything I've come out of MCU in the last 3 years. So
You know, like I said in our initial podcast, I believe, anything in the water looks really good. I mean, and that really shows that they put, because water is hard to animate well.
There are some of the scenes where he's coming out of the water, and I mean, they're not scared to show him close up. While he's in the water. I mean, the CGI is rendered so well enough that you could almost, if you weren't thinking about it too much and didn't know that it was CGI, you could look at it and be like, that could maybe be a guy in a really good suit.
I mean, and like I said, there are times, you could say this about any movie. There are times where you can see the seams. I think a lot of the times when he's on land, it looks a little wonky. But it's a huge improvement over, I think, Shin Godzilla. I rewatched part of Shin Godzilla here the other day, and that movie looked good for a Japanese film at the time, but I think it's a big leap forward.
Like his Ginza scene, where he comes in and wrecks Ginza, It's got some moments that look a little rough. I listened to your guys' thoughts on it initially, and I think you're right that, like, the way he walks and moves is a little awkward.
Yeah.
Now, granted, I'll give it a little bit of a pass, considering the fact that, I mean, we're talking about a creature, A, that doesn't exist, and B, he's kind of got short, stubby, stocky legs in this movie.
Yeah.
So maybe would walk like that. I mean, yeah, he doesn't have a whole lot of range of motion for his legs.
He looks
so.
Like, and I think they tried to make him look like he was really lumbering under his weight, and I think they do a pretty good job at that. And then, like I think I mentioned in our podcast, the scene at the end where he kind of walks on land and destroys the farmhouse or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't think the lighting was quite perfect.
It's a little weird
for what they were trying to do. But overall, I think it looks real. I mean, like I said the other day, that this kind of budget, probably without much exaggeration, wouldn't cover the catering on an MCU movie.
It doesn't even cover the salary of, like, one actor on those movies.
No.
I mean, like you said, RDJ's salary
it's
would
like 50,000 or 50 million for, like, Endgame, I think.
Yeah,
so.
Salary alone. So it's really impressive that, and that's why it's getting a lot of award recognition for its visual effects. I think people recognize that that's amazing that they did that on that kind of budget.
I tell you, probably one of the most impressive, you know, visual effects in the whole movie, I would argue, is, like, anytime, I guess kind of two different things. Like, anytime that he uses his, his atomic breath,
yeah.
Like, at the end of it, after he uses it, he always looks deteriorated,
yeah.
Which it looks really good.
Yeah.
And then, like, when they blow up his mouth toward, you know, the
beginning
of the film, and then when they blow up his head at the end of the movie, looks really solid, and the regeneration effect looks pretty solid.
And that's one thing I wanted to kind of talk about too, that I didn't really touch on in our first podcast. One thing that I think this movie gets right about being a Godzilla movie is it's an event every time he uses his atomic breath.
It takes him kind of out of commission for a minute.
He doesn't overuse it, and it's a big, you know, it's a big spectacle every time, and he has to, like, he didn't even say this in the movie, he has to kind of regenerate after he uses it. You know, some of the Godzilla movies, they just use it too much, and it, you know, kind of lessens the effect every time he uses it, but
right.
I think they do that really well in this movie. And I also want to talk about, you know, I think that scene, that first big scene after he gets irradiated where they're on the boat and it's borrowed from Jaws, but they do the whole kind of Jaws scene with the boat chase. That is a really good scene. That is up there with the best scene in Godzilla history. I mean, it's really tense. It's scary. It's a great way to reintroduce Godzilla after, you know, he's been irradiated. Of course, you see him earlier in the film. But they
portray Godzilla in a way that makes him menacing and a threat, too, as well as, obviously, you have characters at this point that you've established that you care about, so you don't want to see them get eaten by Godzilla in the scene.
And
so.
that like, Wolverine heel factor is really neat the first time you see it. Because, you know, it kind of plays with your expectations, too, because the first time I was watching the movie, and, you know, he got the mine in his mouth, and it didn't go off. I was like, oh, well, I've seen enough monster movies. He's going to swallow it, and it's not going to go off, but it'll come back at the end of the movie. But no, it actually, they do shoot it, and it blows up, and he just, you know, kind of shrugs it off. Let's see, what other things did I want to talk about? You know, I want to talk about a little bit about the score while you were here. You know, I said at the beginning that I had listened to the entire soundtrack before the film came out, because the soundtrack came out on Spotify before the film came out in the U.S. And, you know, listening to the soundtrack by itself, of course, you know, I always love Fukube stuff. You're never going to hear me complain about that. But listening, I was like, you know, of course, I love the Fukube stuff. I thought the original stuff was good, but I was kind of like, you know, I don't know how the original score is going to mesh with the Fukube stuff in the actual film, because it's kind of different. Like, a Fukube, of course, is very bombastic and loud, and the original score was more kind of an ominous, kind of choir-driven.
Yeah, or at least especially toward the end, it gets choir-driven for sure.
But, of course, then I saw the film, and I thought it was perfect, the blend and how they used the Fukube score and the perfect moments. And I've really grown to like, I think his name is Naoki Sato.
That's
right. The original score by Naoki Sato. I've gotten to really like his score for this film. So, and you know, so when you watched it, did you think that the score really works for this movie? Or
I thought it was great. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's nice to hear classic Fukube themes come back into play, and all the marches and everything. But I really like the original music that was created for the movie. I mean, I think it's it's got a great tone and a great feel throughout the entire movie, especially toward the end. I mean, it's when it's not, you know, meshing it with, you know, Ifukube's themes, it provides a great atmosphere for how tense the situation is when they're trying to defeat Godzilla at the end of this movie. So I really like it a lot.
Yeah. One of my favorite moments in the movie is when the Godzilla, the march kicks in for the first time. I mean, it's like really get your blood pumping and bobbing your head and stuff. But anyway, let's see. So Dylan, was there anything else you want to talk about before we give into your letter grade?
Anything else?
I have no idea.
He's
a little out of frag. We're all a little.
You know, honestly, one thing I did notice you guys skipped.
What?
We used to always do creature design.
I know.
Skipped the whole creature design.
I told
section.
Andrew after we recorded, I was like, "You let me skip creature design." But let's take a moment and talk. I mean, we kind of talked about it in that initial
podcast.
Just
really one creature, two forms of them.
Yeah. We have Godzilla, and yeah, so we have. We have the initial form, or whatever you want to call it, of Godzilla, the very beginning of the movie, where he comes on Odo Island and kills the mechanics or whatever. Of course, you know, it's not the first time that they've done a pre-irradiated Godzilla. Of course, you go back to Godzilla versus King Ghidorah, and we had Godzillasaurus and everything. But what did you think about when he first showed up in the movie?
He's still very menacing.
Yeah.
Portrayed in a scary way for the first time in a long time, which was a nice kind of refresher when we've basically been getting these legendary movies for the last few years. His design kind of reminds me more of like the original Godzilla, like OG Godzilla. He's smaller in stature. Obviously, he's not, you know, 300 foot tall.
Yeah.
But, I mean, his dorsal plates look great. I mean, he's still very menacing. He's got a menacing face. His eyes kind of glow red at parts, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Nice touch. So, I mean, I like him.
Yeah, and then when he comes back later and he's been irradiated, yeah, I mean, I really like... There were some fans online that threw a fit because they had already revealed this design in like some kind of theme park ride or something over in Japan, and I think some fans were hoping for something we had never... Which, of course, most people hadn't seen before. Only the diehard fans had bothered to knew about this design. But I think the design works really well. When he comes back after irradiated, I think they get the proportion of the dorsal plates to the size of the rest of his body just right. And they're kind of jagged and uneven. It makes him kind of, you know, feel like a broken creature. And he kind of looks like he's scarred. You know, I've noticed the last couple of viewings, like if that scene where he comes on land at the end and he stands, it almost looks like his tendons and bones are kind of flayed open, like towards his lower legs, towards his feet.
Maybe. I don't think I caught that.
And then, of course, when he powers up his heat ray, I mean, you know, I love, you know, Shin Godzilla, I kind of complained because I thought they went a little too far with the purple lasers coming out of everywhere. But I think the twist in this movie is just great, where he powers up his heat ray and his spikes start like kind of projecting out of his body. And then, you know, like I told you, kind of like you would see a bomb do when the projections will, like, contract and then it'll go boom. You know, that's what he does with his spines and stuff.
Concrete Which, stuff. I mean, all kind of just ties back into the fact that he's supposed to be a giant analogy for the atomic bomb. So.
Yeah, and that first time he uses it on land, and of course it's just
a giant mushroom cloud. And then it, like, rains ash from the sky afterwards, which is...
Yeah, it's pretty sick. Yeah, I mean, I think the design of this movie is really good, and...
Tell me if you think I'm wrong. I think his design, when he's fully irradiated, like there are some of the shots in the water where he reminds me a lot of like the later Heisei era films.
Yeah, I think especially
especially in his head.
In his head, he looks a lot like kind of a little more, I don't know, mammalian, especially like with the placement of his eyes and the kind of more mammalian pupils and things like that. Yeah, I think they do harken back to the kind of Heisei era. With that, but no, I think it's a really good looking Godzilla.
He's great.
It's a good looking film. I mean, one of the things I commented on in the original that I really want to reiterate here is the set design in this movie is really great. I mean, they make you really believe that you're in 1940s era post-war Japan,
especially like post Tokyo air raid Japan. I mean, like when he first gets back from the war, I mean, he's in an area where, I mean, all these houses and things have been just completely destroyed, and I mean, they've got, I mean, the time that it must have taken to build this area, I mean, there's broken and burnt pieces of wood and pieces of houses just everywhere. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
And like I said in our first podcast, you know, everybody, of course, in the history books remembers the bombs that we dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But most people in America, at least, don't remember the fact that before we did that, we had firebombed Tokyo into oblivion.
If anyone's seen Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, Pearl Harbor has a little bit different perspective.
They talk about the Doolittle raids.
A little bit different perspective on it in Pearl Harbor. I mean, if you've seen a film like Grave of the Fireflies, which of course is really built around the Tokyo air raids, even darker than this film. Which I would recommend, by the way, if you haven't seen Grave of the Fireflies. It's kind of hard to get a hold of for some reason, but it's a great film. And I think even, you know, some other Studio Ghibli movies might make reference to them. But so, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a great film. It's a great film. I think we can agree.
The cinematography is really good in this movie, too. I mean, it starts out with a great shot of a plane flying over water.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty sure that's a real plane.
Yeah. That's one of the things.
They put a camera on a real plane and flew it.
That's one of the things I really enjoy about this movie is a lot of the planes are actual physical objects. A lot of the stuff especially the stuff in the small boat, or they actually went out on a boat on the sea. MCU would never dream of doing this. Actually went out on a boat on the sea and filmed some scenes in the water.
Oh my.
Yeah, I know. So I really appreciate it. And like, just even in the more mundane scenes, I think the cinematography, the camera angles, when they do wide shots, when they don't, I mean, it's really well shot movie. But
you know, something I will say that I don't necessarily disagree with you, but I don't think is quite as a flaw as you pointed it out in your initial review.
Yeah.
I thought the pacing during the middle act,
yeah,
where it slows down after the Ginza attack,
yeah,
when Godzilla goes away for a little while,
yeah,
I don't think it drags as much as maybe you thought it did. I don't know if your thoughts have changed after repeat viewings or not, but I think that the characters, they have enough little beats here and there during those scenes, and they're emotional parts enough that make you feel for the characters, that progresses the story along and in a quick enough way that it doesn't, I mean, obviously it does slow down a little bit,
yeah,
but I don't think it like drags necessarily. I think it still gets you through that middle section with enough character development that you're ready to see the end of the movie,
yeah,
and excited for what's going to happen,
yeah,
and hope that they pull through.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a good point. I still think having seen it six times, I do think that it does kind of, for me, it kind of drags a little bit. It doesn't kill the movie by any stretch. And I think, you know, we were talking about other, you know, best picture, you know, caliber movies this year. Like, I think Oppenheimer's got major pacing issues too. I think Killers of the Flower Moon is like 3.5 freaking hours long. Of course, there's going to be some pacing issues there. So it's not something that like it does bad that every other movie that I've seen this year does great or anything.
Right.
But I think if I were going to rearrange it a little bit, I think I would push the boat scene, the initial boat scene, and the Ginza attack a little bit further apart, so we didn't have such a big gap from the Ginza attack to the final sequence. But I mean, it doesn't kill the movie by any means. I mean, like you said, there's still enough character drama there and character beats to keep it interesting. But yeah. Yeah, no movie is flawless.
Definitely not.
No movie is flawless. Which, do you wanna give it some final thoughts and a little bit of a letter grade since you haven't done that yet?
Sure. I mean, overall, I was very impressed walking out of this. I mean, I've, again, sat through 37 of these, and there's been some really rough spots.
Ups and downs. Ups and downs.
there's some great points in some of
peaks
them.
Peaks and valleys.
There's some really high peaks, and there's some really low valleys. But overall, I mean, this movie was, I mean, it's arguably one of the best movies I've seen this year. It's easily one of the best Godzilla movies I've seen, for sure. For the first time, like we've already said, I mean, for the first time pretty much ever, it's got real characters that have a purpose, have an arc that you feel for and want to come out of this situation alive and in a good way. Godzilla's terrifying and actually a scary and menacing threat for the first time in years, which is always a nice touch. It doesn't feel like we're, you know, again, kind of like I said, some of those Showa era movies where he's just your friendly neighborhood Godzilla, or the legendary movies where he's kind of an anti-hero and a hero at times. I mean, visual effects for what they were able to accomplish with the amount of money that they had are really, really impressive. I mean, from the CGI to the set design to everything on that front, the fact that they were able to create what they did with the limited amount of funds is really impressive. But I think ultimately that stems down to, I think you mentioned in your initial thoughts, was they had almost 3 years to make this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of time that they put into this movie really shows. I mean, I think if you tried to rush the production of this movie, like some of those older Godzilla movies, mm-hmm. it would not be near as good. They really had the time to let the writer and director, who were the same person, if I'm not mistaken, yeah. right,
Yamazaki.
Sit and kind of really craft the story in a way that really helps this movie. Mm-hmm. The score is fantastic. I mean, it's nice hearing a Fuka-based theme, but the original music is great. Overall, I mean, I thought it was really solid. I mean, I'd give it an A+ as far as Godzilla movies go.
No, well, that's nice. I think 3 A+s across the board, I believe, if I remember our rankings correctly. So, yeah, that's great. What do you think about this black and white release they got coming?
Yeah.
You think it'll look neat in black and white?
I mean, it's going to be the same movie, just in black and white. So, I mean, it's good.
Well, you know,
it'll be a cool touch.
They did the same thing for, like, Logan, at least a chromatic right. version, whatever they called it. You know, I think it looks, I mean, of course I would go see it. I love in the trailer how they added like the original radio broadcast from that original movie, and then at the end of it she's like -1, -color. So I mean, I think, you know, I'm sure maybe, I don't think they'll release it in the US, but maybe on the, whenever they get around to a physical release, maybe they'll include it on that.
It'll have to be the black and white version.
Be nice. Yeah. So I did want to take just a moment to talk about the Oscars. I know people kind of think, roll their eyes when they hear Godzilla and Oscars and stuff like that. Of course, it made the even shorter list for finalists for the Visual Effects Award. It was on the 20 list. It got down to the 10 list, and then they'll do a final cut to make it 5 nominees, which I think most of the forecasts I've seen think that they'll probably make the final cut. You know, it's garnered a lot of awards and nominations for awards on the smaller circuit. You know, awards ceremonies and circles. It didn't get on the short list for best international feature. I think that probably the main reason for that is that it missed the deadline. I did way too much digging into this. In order for you to qualify for the best international feature, you have to release your film in your home market on or before October 31st of this year. And of course, they wanted to release this on Godzilla's birthday, 69th birthday, technically. So they released it on November 3rd, so it didn't meet the deadline. Now, the deadline for submission for Best Picture was, which they had not released the shortlist for, they'll probably keep that under wraps until the actual nominees come out, was November 15th, and it didn't even have to technically release in a major market until December 31st to qualify. So, I mean, it would qualify for that. I don't know if Toho submitted it. They released a poster that said, for your consideration in all categories, which would suggest that they submitted it. It'll probably not get nominated, just looking at, like, Golden Globes. You know, the Oscars usually mirror the Golden Globes pretty closely, and it didn't get any Golden Globe nominations.
For the most part, yeah. The Golden Globes in the award circuit, for most people, from what I understand, are kind of a joke.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think the Oscars, to me, I think the Oscars have lost a lot of, you know, I'm not just saying this because I'm upset about whatever happens to Godzilla, but I think the Oscars, not to turn this into an Oscars podcast, have lost a lot of meaning over the last decade or so. I mean, they got kind of silly with trying to nominate popular movies just to dominate popular, like Avatar 2 is not a Best Picture, okay, nominee worthy, okay? You know, neither probably are movies like the first Avatar or, you know, Black Panther, you know, whatever they've been nominated. Did they not nominate Black Panther 2? I don't remember if they did or not.
I don't think they nominated Black Panther 2, but.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, it wins an Oscar, doesn't win an Oscar. I mean, it doesn't really matter that much. All that matters is it was a good movie and that people enjoyed it.
That's a true statement.
And yeah, that they're going to make more, because baby, they are.
I mean, this movie's made a lot of money compared to its budget. I
based
mean,
on its margins.
We're at, what, like 74 million, 72, 73?
Yeah, a little over 70 million globally, which has made more. It hasn't made as much in U.S. dollars as Shin Godzilla did globally yet. It has made more yen, so basically sold more tickets globally than Shin Godzilla did, because the conversion rate and the weakening of the Japanese yen, blah, 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 you know, financial stuff. But it's done really well. Big success by any measure that they could measure it by. And, of course, mm-hmm. they've already come out and said that they're looking at ways to expand the franchise and this and that. I think they're the reason that they released this in the 69th year and not in the 70th year is because I believe their contract with Legendary says that they have to, they cannot release a Godzilla film in theaters, at least internationally, in the same calendar year that they release, that a Legendary releases a Godzilla film. And of course, in just a short 4 months' time, give or take a few days, we have another Godzilla movie, which, transitioning into that, have you seen the GXK trailer?
Yes, I have.
What are your... me and Andrew kind of already talked about our thoughts. What are your thoughts on that?
Something.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be great.
Yeah.
You don't like Pink Godzilla?
I think we're doubling down on the... Don't get me wrong. When we reviewed Godzilla vs. Kong, that movie is extremely entertaining.
Yeah. Is it entertaining?
It's not a good movie.
No.
It's highly entertaining. We are doubling down on the things that made that movie extremely dumb and stupid, though.
We're doubling down on the goofy element, for sure. Yeah.
Like, why is Godzilla's atomic breath pink? Why does Kong have a mech arm at one point? Why big orangutan? Why more Hollow Earth mumbo jumbo?
I think Kong like comes up from under the pyramids at one point. Destroys the pyramids, no big deal.
I know that it's not fully rendered, probably. Mm-hmm. Probably. CGI looks...
It looks a bit cartoony.
The little baby Kong looks terrible.
He looks a bit cartoony.
He looks terrible.
He looks like he came out of that Jungle Book movie from 20...
Oh, no, no, no. No. Worse.
Worse.
He looks like a cartoon character.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like I said when we covered our thoughts on the trailer the first time, I think... And, you know, like I want to reiterate, if you enjoy the MonsterVerse films, that's great. I'm not judging you for enjoying them. I wish more... You know, I'm glad that people do enjoy any Godzilla content whenever it comes out. For me... The fact that we just got Godzilla Minus One and it showed that Godzilla can be legit great cinema. The fact that we're going back to the MonsterVerse and such a short turnaround with this goofy, like, just, you know, popcorn flick, big monkey, big lizard, other big monkey, orange monkey kind of tone. I think, you know, it's going to make it harder for me to enjoy this movie. And, of course, I don't expect... that the human characters are going to be...
I'm not expecting high art. Not by any means.
The director has basically already came out and said that they just basically have multiple, like, 10-minute sequences of just completely animated monster fights and no humans in sight. So I think they've kind of given up on the human characters at this point.
I mean, I think at this point, I think they've established that the human characters are never a strong point of these movies. Not that they couldn't be.
Yeah. They just, for whatever
reason, Godzilla Minus One, you can make good characters in a Godzilla movie.
They just can't make it work. And speaking of the MonsterVerse, I know we talked about a bit about this off air. Have you seen any of the Monarch Apple TV show?
I have not. I forgot my Apple TV Plus login.
Do you have any plans on watching it? Or
I mean, I'd like to check it out. I've heard that it's decent at times.
Yeah, I mean, of course, Andrew and I, and if you would like to catch up and join us on that podcast, of course, you're welcome. January 17th, I have it tentatively scheduled because that'll be after the last episode airs. We'll do a full episode review on it. My basic thoughts at this point, where we're 7 episodes in to a 12 episode, what is it, 10, 12 episodes? I don't know. But, you know, it got off to a strong start, I think. I think, like, the first 3 episodes, I pretty really enjoyed.
Yeah.
It's lost some momentum the last few weeks. But, you know, it is what it is. But we'll talk about that at a later date. I did want to spend a little bit of time talking about our upcoming schedule. I've talked about it before, of course. I think I forgot to mention the last couple of weeks that we were doing this show right here. So, Shin Ultraman still coming next week. Shin Kamen Rider coming the week after that. Shin Kamen Rider is available on Amazon Prime. If you are subscribed to Amazon Prime, it is free. So you can watch it there if you so wish. That's where we'll be watching it because I do not believe it has a U.S.-approved physical media release yet. And then we will do... what else did I have on the schedule? Was that it? That might be it. Or did I put the Monarch thing on the schedule. And after that, I don't have anything.
We'll see what set. Happens.
The Blazar, I think I said Blazar will be coming to an end around that time too. We'll probably do a wrap-up episode on Blazar. Movie will be coming out on Blazar in February. And then, of course, Godzilla X Kong in April. And Dylan will join us for an episode over that, I'm sure.
I will.
So we're excited for that. So, like I said, you know, anytime you want to call, we could probably figure out the call-in thing, and then you record your own audio, and I'm probably just smart enough to figure out how to line it up and cut, splice it together in Audacity. So we can do that anytime you feel like joining an episode. Just
Can the computer and the internet handle that?
I mean, it will.
Probably.
I hear rumors I'm getting a new computer for Christmas. I don't know if these are confirmed or not.
Ooh, fancy.
So, we'll be fine. We'll be fine. So, Dylan, it was great having you on.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be back.
You're welcome anytime. I know the listeners are, you know, they said that they were excited to hear your thoughts on this film.
So. Where's Dylan? I'm here.
I know, because, I mean, really, we know you're the true star of this
podcast. Definitely not. Everyone's like, what's that one guy that has never watched these movies think?
We like that guy.
Every podcast needs a new. It works better when there's the seasoned veteran and the newbie. He's like, what is this?
What is
this? I don't want to do this.
I think
anymore.
I've said that a lot. What is this?
What am I watching?
What am I watching?
But anyway, I think unless you had anything else you wanted to say.
Not that I can think of off the top of my head.
I think that about wraps us up for us for this week. So
yeah.
Thanks for joining us. Listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll be back next week with Shin Ultraman. So check that out if you haven't seen it. There is, I think, at least one Blu-ray release available for you to get out there. So don't forget that you can contact us at stompthisway1954@gmail.com.
That's what I heard.
Yep. Yes. Andrew, do you remember our new website that you can find us at?
stompthisway.wordpress.com.
That's right.
Look at you go.
Very bare bones, but it's out there.
And my guess is that we probably still have some social media accounts out there. Mostly just Facebook would be my guess.
I kind of abandoned the other social media accounts because it's just too much.
Well, I mean, your Facebook and the Instagram were technically combined, so you can... They're the same account.
Yeah.
So probably still on Instagram, but definitely on Facebook. It's on Facebook. Stomp This Way.
That's right. So anyway, as always, thank you for listening. I'm Aaron.
I'm Andrew.
And I'm Dylan.
And we'll see you next time.